Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Bishop Mark Andrus. He is talking about this extraordinary relationship between Martin Luther King and Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist monk. And even though they only met on very few occasions, I mean, I think only two occasions, they became what you call brothers and continued to be checking in with one another. And when you were bishop in Alabama, I remember you're writing about, you were right in the place that so much history of civil rights had taken place there in Birmingham. And the house that you were housed in was called the Carpenter House after C.C. Carpenter. Mm-hmm. And he was wonderful in himself. But going back to the time when you were there, you heard the talk that Congressman, the late Congressman John Lewis gave. You actually heard it. And you heard the words, beloved community, that he was talking about. Yes. in that talk. How did that affect you? And what sparked you when you heard that? Because it seems like that became a theme in your own life.
It very much did. The context of his sermon, where he mentioned beloved community, was a pilgrimage that we host every year in the Episcopal Diocese of Alabama down in Lowndes County, which was the birth of the Black Panther Party, Freedom Party. And that was a voting rights organization of Black people in Lowndes County seeking to assert themselves in the face of white supremacy, the symbol for the white Democratic Party at that time was a white rooster, and their motto on that logo was explicit. It was white supremacy. So the Black Panther Freedom Party was born there in Lowndes County, and a white, young white seminarian from New Hampshire, who was a student at the Episcopal Divinity School in Cambridge, Massachusetts, was martyred in Lowndes County, saving the life of a young Black activist, Ruby Sales, who is an extraordinary person to this day. And we have this pilgrimage every year to remember all the martyrs in the civil rights movement in Alabama, and including Jonathan Daniels. And it was in that context, I would invite a different preacher each year, and Congressman Lewis came to preach. And so it's a very full of meaning. We hold the Eucharist in the courthouse where Jonathan Daniels' murderer was tried and released. He never served a day in jail. And we turn that over and in that space. So it's a very holy, a sacred moment, a sacred space of martyrdom. He was martyred right a few steps from the courthouse after they were let out of the jail where they had been jailed in August. And Congressman Lewis preaching talked about the beloved community. I had never heard the term before. I didn't know the deep commitment that Martin Luther King Jr. had to the beloved community, nor Howard Thurman before him, nor Thich Nhat Hanh. But I heard the phrase, and as Annie Dillard said about a point in her life, it was as if I had been picked up like a bell and rung. I felt it reverberate through me without knowing much about it at all. And that was the summer that Sheila, my wife, and I moved to California. For me to become Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of California. And if you will, I brought that resonating term with me. And we started talking about it here in the Bay Area. Could we understand and could we manifest the beloved community? Could that be what we might do? And so for the past 17 years, I've been seeking to to do those two things, understand it more and embody it more with other people.
I want to ask about the beloved community and just how you conceive it. And is this divinely inspired? Like, I'm trying to grasp it because it's not purely secular, I think. I may be wrong about that.
And no, then, you're right.
Then we kind of resist that and we say, oh, no, we can only do our work in civil rights or the rights of all people and peace and justice. And that's not secular. But there's this kind of thread that runs through. Please help us to understand it.
That's it. Again, you asked the most marvelous questions. I make this concept too complex. As one person said to me, it is a world at peace. Okay, the beloved community is a world at peace. But that then implies some things, or maybe raises some more questions. What would a world at peace look like? Well, it would look like a place where we were in mutual relationships of all subjects, not some subjects and a bunch of objects, right? That's the world we live in now. We live in a world where some people are objects. The earth is an object. They do not have the same standing that I do. And thus, they're available to me to be used and abused. Then this is the prevailing worldview in the world now. And so the beloved community is quite different than that. It's a place where all those objects suddenly emerge as equal to each other. And what binds them together? So it's as Dr. King said, it's a deeply interconnected world. But the interconnection, we can interconnect, you and I can connect over many things. We could connect over our mutual dislike of something or our mutual fear of something or our mutual desire to profit from something. You know, we can see that people enrich themselves by connecting with each other and making common cause. So interconnection by itself is not sacred and it's not holy. But the interconnection that creates the beloved community is love. And you referred to overflowing love in the beginning, and that's how I translate the kind of love that Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King were talking about. It's sometimes called unconditional love. It's sometimes called sacrificial love. And those are true. But I was looking for a way to talk about it that's not negation, unconditional. So it's not conditional. It's not sacrificial giving up something. It's overflowing love. And that creates the beloved community. So if you and I are connected by love, that is different than being connected by profit desire or by fear or by hatred. We're connected by love. And a world connected by love, at peace with itself, is the beloved community. And each of the people who held the teachings of the beloved community, the lineage of the beloved community, has helped us, each of those people has helped us understand more about it. So Thich Nhat Hanh helped us understand that it's not just between people. It also includes the earth. And in fact, for him, the cosmos. He helped us understand that women and men were equally in the beloved community. So each of these people has illuminated. They didn't make that happen. They uncovered the truth of that. So this was the beloved community. And you ask the person who coined the term, Josiah Royce, originally born and raised in Grass Valley, California, in the 1870s. He went to UC Berkeley when it was only a 10-year-old institution. He got his PhD, the fourth PhD only that had been granted at Johns Hopkins University. I mean, you know, we're such a young country, and he was part of such a young expression of this country. He coined the term, and he is the one who said it is a world connected by love, and that it was a world of peace with itself. But there was a lot he didn't see about it. he didn't understand that it was a nonviolent world. So he wrote his book about it in 1913, at the just before World War I begins, and he embraced, not embraced, but he believed that that war was a necessary war, right? So, but the next person who held the lineage of the beloved community said, no, it is a nonviolent world. You know, so each person has helped us uncover.
Was that Howard Thurman then? Was the next person?
A.J. Mustey.
Oh, right. Yes.
And then
yes,
Thurman, Thurman called the Fellowship of Religion, which was kind of the container organization, a peace organization, international peace organization, he called them to task and said, you can't advocate for peace internationally if you ignore the racial inequality in our own country. Yeah. So he said, you've got to pay attention to that.
What I'm getting from all that you have spoken here is that there is a non-material component to the beloved community, is what I'm getting. It's a,
right.
It's like a thread, an energy, a process that's going through it that is beyond the material,
right?
Beyond the us and them, and beyond all of that. Say,
you know, specifically, you asked, and I got caught up in what Josiah Royce did, but he specifically, to your question, Justine, he said, the beloved community is of divine origin. Okay, so people can be really uncomfortable with that. I completely understand that. But here's the beauty of it. It's not a product made by us. It depends on our loyalty. We can damage it, but it doesn't depend on us. And that's, to me, a great gift. And in other words, it's beyond me at one level. And Roy says the beloved community itself helps us. In other words, it's an agent. It has action. That is entirely mysterious to me. It's the idea of this vastness that is more than even just the earth. And in its deep interconnected quality, it is also active for its own health. So the idea that the whole is present in each of the parts of the whole. Okay, that's a really interesting idea, and it's one that Thich Nhat Hanh believed in, that the whole, the universe, is present in every particle of the universe. Well, if that's true, and the universe is love, if God is love, then the way that the whole relates to you, Justine, or to me, Mark, or to any part of the whole is by means of love. And so we can believe that the beloved community is acting, is durable, it cannot be destroyed, and it's active in the cause of compassion.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm here with Bishop Mark Andrus, and you're just filling my heart with this thread of the divine that runs through everything. So I just want to remind people he is the author of Brothers in the Beloved Community. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Bishop Mark Andrus. And by the way, he spells his name M-A-R-C-A-N-D-R-U-S. Mark Andrus. And what we were talking about, it reminds me of something that you have said that it just, I loved reading what you said about prayer. And you say prayer is an antidote to egotism, to the delusion that all depends on our own efforts. So that kind of, for me, dovetails with what you were talking about, this divine quality that's running through everything. So prayer helps us to not depend on our own personal efforts. Please elaborate on that for us. I want to know more of.
Well, thank you. Prayer is something that's held by all of the earth, isn't it? Every religion, every spiritual tradition has something like prayer. And Thich Nhat Hanh's approach to prayer, I think, is really helpful for a Christian like me who was raised praying. He talks about prayer. One of his wonderful metaphors is the wave and the ocean. And the wave sometimes might think of itself as the whole picture, right? Here I am, the wave, I've got this dynamism, but it's always part of this vast vastness, the ocean, the sublime. And what Thich Nhat Hanh says is every moment of our lives, we have the ability, as he puts it, to touch the ultimate. Well, that's prayer. The ability to touch the ultimate. And it's available to every being at every moment. So you know, you don't have to be in a particular spot, in a particular religious context. You can touch the ultimate at any time, in any place, whoever you are. It's completely open to each of us. Well, that is a beautiful idea of prayer to me. It holds all kinds of prayer, you know, Buddhist prayer wheels and prayer flags and mantras, but also Christians praying for the healing of somebody they love, praying for their own lives, praying for peace in the world. All of that is contained. But if we think of it as a fundamental definition of prayer, the ability to touch the ultimate, that I think is such a beautiful gift.
It surely is, surely is. Going back to that time that you spent in Alabama, and you would have these annual gatherings, and part of that gathering was to really grieve and to acknowledge the martyrs of the movement, especially of the civil rights movement that was happening at that time and continues to happen, I must say. Thich Nhat Hanh, when he was exiled from Vietnam for many, many years because of his view of the war in Vietnam, which actually took place long before it was happening, long before the U.S. entered. Mm-hmm. It was already at war for almost a decade, I think. The North and the South are already there. And one of the things that he did in coming back when he was allowed back, he said that there was one thing he wanted from the government and that, or from the central church at that time, even though now the whole country was under the communist rule, but it did have some church, one central church, and it was a Buddhist church. And mm-hmm. he said he wanted that there be a ritual for grief from all the people who had lost their lives and who were missing. Tell us about his asking for that and what was the result of that?
Yes, Justine, that is a piece of the research, piece of the book that is part of this untold story. And it captures the imagination of so many people when they read about it, because it's an unknown story and it's so beautiful. So, you know, the government in Vietnam was uneasy. with him coming back. He's beloved, he's revered, respected, and yet not easily controllable. he not the party line, and so on. And he made his own requirement, as you say, that he would be allowed to go sort of region by region in the country and invite people who had lost people. And by lost, I mean lost, like in the disappeared people in South America, their husbands, their sons, their brothers, their lovers, had disappeared, certainly killed. But their whereabouts maybe not even known, their bodies and how they died. And, you know, that trauma just is an open wound. And he created a ritual where people could come and mourn. And there are many accounts of people having spiritual healing in those rituals where they were visited. They tell the accounts where they were visited by their lost loves, their lost family members who appeared to them, who were felt by them. And there was a healing that took place. And it's an extraordinary story. And it points to something that he believed very firmly, which is that the love in our lives never dies, and that it is active in the world. So this is, you know, it's a fundamental idea in Christianity and in Mahayana Buddhism that the great lights of the world continue their work of love and liberation beyond death. So this is not a revolutionary idea, but it's one that we don't live with all the time. And, you know, this was a motivating idea in my research is when he said, when Thich Nhat Hanh said in 2014, reflecting on Dr. King's death, his assassination, after he made this extraordinary statement, the end of it was, he said, "I have always felt his support. I have always felt his support." So he's always felt Martin's support. And I wondered, my question for myself was, what did he mean by that? Did he mean that he just remembered him and that gave him comfort? He read his sermons or the letters they exchanged, their memories of their meetings together, and that gave him strength and comfort? Or did he mean literally a living being still active in the world and able to be compassionate and helpful? And I concluded very firmly the latter. He believed that Dr. King was still living, still active, still, as he called him, a bodhisattva, a Buddhist saint, who is vowed to work for the liberation of all beings until all beings are liberated. So that, of course, goes long beyond our mortal lives. And I think he firmly believed that. And interestingly, the great nonviolent activist David Hartsaw here in San Francisco told a story in my presence. Again, he repeated it yesterday when I was with him with a group of about 25 people. He was 15 years old, I think, when Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. And several years later, he was young activist, nonviolent activist. He was in Switzerland, sitting on a bench contemplating with his eyes closed, and he felt a hand on his shoulder, and he knew it was Martin Luther King Jr. And then he heard Martin's voice say to him, "David, I know the work for nonviolence and peace is hard, and I want to tell you I will always be with you."
Wow.
And this is what Thich Nhat Hanh experienced.
Yeah.
And it's what we can experience.
And I was going to say, it's a living presence, I think, of indigenous people really teaching us about calling on the ancestors.
Yes, exactly.
And like Martin Luther King and so many others, Thich Nhat Hanh himself, they are our ancestors in this work.
Yes.
So I really appreciate that. story and that assurance, I feel assurance that we are connected beyond beyond the material. There is so much available to us. I want to thank you. There's so much more we could talk about. I love being with you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. I want to let our listeners know that if you want to know more about the work of Bishop Mark Andrus, you can go to a website. It's called deocal.org, and I'd spell that D-I as in diocese, D-I-O-Cal as in California, C-A-L.org/bishop, DIOCAL.org/bishop. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. And let's collectively know each of us can begin our own circle of beloved community. It's something easy to do. Call together two or three, four people together and support one another in this great work of coming together for the betterment of all humankind.
Beautiful.
Before I go, I just want to remind people that the book that has so inspired me and inspired this interview is called Brothers in the Beloved Community, The Friendship of Thich Nhat Hanh and Martin Luther King Jr. So with that, I want to say I'm Justine Willis-Toms, and you've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3786.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You, too, can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Wes Skoop-Nisker, author of Crazy Wisdom Saves the World Again. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about evolution, and I'll change your synapses and make you laugh and entice you to be here. Wow.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.